You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
I've been mostly interested in this idea of Ryan Murphy going in and doing these one-off miniseries seasons on major events. But when Hollywood was announced, especially when it went to Netflix, I was a little bit interested. I think Netflix, they've hit it out of the park with enough of their TV content so that when I see something that seems aimed at me, I'm pretty sure I'm going to enjoy it. But oh dear God, was I not prepared for Hollywood.
Well, who is?
And so today we have myself, Aaron, and Nathan.
Hola, ¿qué pasa?
And Frank here.
Hiya.
And I have a guesstimation that I think I may have liked Hollywood the most out of all of us, which is not to say that I loved it, but I didn't hate it.
Okay. I'm going to read some of your, some pull quotes from our chat.
So, Hollywood, my only thing that I knew about it going into it was some headline I saw where they were like, Hollywood is exactly what everybody thought Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was going to be. And so, when you start the movie off, it's following a fictional character. It's largely a solo character piece for the entire first episode as he gets back from the war in the 40s. He decides that he wants to get a job in Hollywood as an actor, finds that it's difficult, and decides to become a prostitute at a gas station, which you might think I'm spoiling something, but I swear to God, this is 10 minutes into the show.
It's fine. If it's in the trailer, it's fair game. Yeah. That's my philosophy.
And we follow him for the entire first episode as he slowly gets into Hollywood itself. And then once that happens, we start branching off into a bunch of characters. And I didn't really get what he was trying to do till about halfway through before I realized that every single character, barring that one character, is either gay, is a minority of a different race, is a woman. This is Hollywood as it was if people decided to get their act together and start trying to address issues of racism and sexism back in the day.
It's a history fantasy where it's weird. It wants to have it both ways.
For me, it ends up being a little bit more offensive this way than it definitely ever meant to.
That's valid because, and I apologize in advance if this review is a little bit scattershot, but it's Hollywood and itself is a little bit scattershot. So, you're right. Because there are so many characters who are LGBTQ or who are of different races, I wasn't sure if I was watching something that was actually empowering to the gay community or if it was actually something that was offensive.
It's not empowering to the gay community whatsoever, really, I feel. I've watched most of Ryan Murphy's body of work, and, as a gay guy myself, I got to say, I've, seen my share of daddies in the gay scene, whatnot. But every time I see a Ryan Murphy production and there's just sex scene after sex scene, I just picture him in daily saying, yeah, we need more humping, it feels so sleazy and, exploitation-esque. A lot of this feels like, well, I injected a moment where they talk about race. So now I can show David Cornsweet, humping Patti LuPone for 2 minutes because I've earned it. And it's just so you don't get to have both. That's a problem that I've always had with Ryan Murphy is that he always tries to play that sort of thing. And it just feels so sleazy every time I see it. And here it felt, more sleazy than ever.
Sleazy is definitely the right word because so much of this show is just like, if I knew nothing about Hollywood, I would figure you just got to suck the right amount of dicks and you're going to be on the top. And, in some cases, we've seen in the past 5 years with the Me Too movement that's been kind of the case in some areas of Hollywood. But this show kind of just creates a reality where it's just this society that is completely built on sex, more so than actual love for film.
And isn't it a little bit of like life imitating art that we got this like super producer that's actually like constructing all this? You know, he's getting his rocks off watching all the rushes and the dailies of this thing. I don't know. I was really like, come on, Ryan.
No, that was the thing with the show, and is that I think every time they really got into like character work and started showing us the ends of these people who they build up, that I was kind of into it. And then he'd throw in sex, which I think I kind of need to go into the plot a bit beyond just the first episode.
You hit the nail on the head, you know, exactly. You know, for me anyways, Aaron, when like that first meeting between Avis and Jack, is that his name, Jack? Yeah, they had. I love their first scene in the hotel room together when they're talking about their backgrounds and their experiences. And it's I love seeing the interplay between these two people at totally opposite ends of the Hollywood spectrum. And neither one is who the Hollywood establishment society has made them out to be. And it's a really beautiful scene. I thought, oh, okay. You know, I let my guard down a little bit. But then all of a sudden, you know, hey, oral sex. Let's go for it.
This show felt more about sex than the actual show Masters of Sex.
Well, so just to go into the plot a little bit, because I do feel like we owe it that. Basically, it follows Jack Costello as he gets into acting. He runs into randomly a wannabe writer who is literally giving out hand jobs and oral sex in a porn theater.
Oh, God. Talk about cringeworthy scenes. Oh, God.
That's how they meet. And that character, who is, I believe, played by Jeremy Pope, there we go, who does a great job playing a gay black man who is trying to write a movie about a woman named Peg who couldn't make it in Hollywood and jumped off the Hollywood sign to kill herself. At the same time, you follow Darren Criss and Laura Harrier, who are an interracial couple. She's an actress. He's a first-time director, as they're both trying to make movies that empower minority characters.
She is so luminous. Oh, my God. Those eyes. Oh,
I've only ever seen her before
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. And so this was kind of a revelation.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
And so there's also Joe Mantello as Dick Samuels, who's kind of the head of production of this a studio that's a fake studio that has a lot of similarities to real ones called Ace Pictures. Dylan McDermott's in this. Jim Parsons in this is a really horrible human being.
Oh my God, yeah.
I cringed from the moment he came on screen. And by the end of it, his last like few scenes, I had to leave the room. I mean, I just couldn't even, like, I couldn't bear to be even watch this horrible human being. Like, he didn't even earn a single redemptive point.
And they try for the redemption arc.
The cast is freakishly stacked. I mean, like, I haven't mentioned half of the A-list people in this show.
Fucking Reiner.
Queen Latifah. Like, they all knock it out of the park and do a great job, even if the people they're playing are absolutely horrible people. And so it follows this group of characters who kind of all come together behind this one mission of making this movie, Peg. And then it kind of forms into a movie called Meg, which is a lot more about the African-American community in Hollywood. And like, they're wanting to make a this-is-going-to-change-America kind of film in the 40s, which is where you get into the fantasy land, because this never would have happened in the 40s. Two-thirds of this show, this is the reason why I like it, is two-thirds, was really good. Anytime they got into any of the character work, like, oh my God. God, Joe Mantello as Dick Samuels was my favorite character.
Well, the thing is that one of Ryan Murphy's strengths is that he's always loved actors, and he's always loved watching actors, you know, showcase their talent, you know, use their instruments. And that's one of the few things, that's probably one of the only things he gets right here, is that he lets like character scenes really play out. He's not rushed, you know, to move the plot along. And I think that's especially true with the Dick Samuels character, especially.
And he also, he has a bunch of people who are older, too. This is the first show like this I've ever seen where all of my favorite characters were above the age of 50.
Oh, totally.
Like, I like Patti LuPone. I thought I had to get past Patti LuPone. She's such a New Yorker Broadway staple that to see her in a movie about, you know, the old school Hollywood is kind of like jarring a little bit. But man, she was good. And
well, and like I was a big fan of Samara Weaving. She plays the daughter of the studio head.
You mentioned that
the very first time you see her, and for the first half of the show, she is generic bitch number one. Like, you know that she's going to be the antagonist character. And what they end up doing with her, I was pleasantly surprised. So I was like, oh, cool. I actually like that you're a real person and not just this random archetype.
That the moment when that happened, though, really, I think, is when you find out who she really is. Like, who you know, where she comes from, you know, where she, without giving any spoilers away, that would be spoiled. Then you see her in a different light. You see her as someone who really wants to like earn her stripes and legitimately wants to do it on her own and wants to make a name for herself. I think that that's where the tide turns with that character, is when you find, because in finding who she is, you find out what she wants for herself.
No, you're right. And that's the magic of this show. Every time the characters are allowed to shine, this show is enthralling and it's interesting. The problem is that every time the show needs to either manufacture drama or the characters in the show have to solve a problem, it's sex.
Sex is the answer.
Like, I'll admit, sex is fun. You know, I like sex in my shows. It's yay, yeah. Boobs and butts of all stripes.
But who the fuck wants to watch it during quarantine?
But
it's also the difference between like an HBO show and a Showtime show.
Actually, yeah. I'd argue it's Adventures into Stars. This feels like a Stars show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's way more apt, Aaron.
If you cut out the 5 to 10 minutes of sex in this, then this is a better show for it. Like I think legitimately, if you cut out 2/3 of the sex after the first episode, this you'd lose an episode because of length. But this show is like 2 or 3 times as good. It is better without
it's,
it.
Well, it's not good. It's better, but it's not good.
Okay, fine. So you people who hated it, I want to hear your opinions.
My biggest issue with the show, I mean, outside of some issues that are heavy with the ending, is that the characters just really don't have consequences for any of their actions. At least the ones who really do sinful things, like Jim Parsons. I mean, there are so many issues with him throughout the entire show. Even the character of Jack, his decision to cheat on his wife and become a prostitute is only addressed in one scene and then quickly resolved. Everything is just so quickly resolved in the show.
Like, I kept on forgetting about his wife. I'm like, you are still around. Wow. Hey.
Yeah. Well, that's because the show forgot about her. Because it's not about her. Which is fine if they don't build up the drama of him being discovered for the first 2 or 3 episodes.
Yeah. They do all the legwork to add some tension to his lifestyle. Which, I mean, is not nearly as bad as some of the other characters in this.
I mean, like, fuck, I'd live in that place if I was a quote-unquote struggling actor. Oh my God.
But they drop things so quickly.
And so, like, I think, so I want to call it Jim Parsons because, well, first of all, I think he did a great job as the character, even if that character was reprehensible. I think Jim Parsons is a victim of the show's short run length. Because I can see them wanting to go, like with a lot of the topics they cover, going, okay, this is Me Too if Me Too went quote unquote right, where the character is reprehensible, he has this history of violent abuse, and then has an epiphany moment where they go, oh my God, I was doing bad. It's never given enough weight to breathe. And on top of that, it feels forced because it's about Hollywood, so we have to talk about this.
It's not earned. His revelation is never once earned.
Yeah, it's absolutely not earned. Thank you for that, Frank. Yeah, no, when he gets into it where he's like, you know, I did all these awful things and, you know, it's because of all this. He does all of that soul searching off screen. And even then, he spent the past 6 episodes being a reprehensible piece of shit.
That's funny because he has a revelation by watching something on screen like that. But, you know, that's really what changes him. Like that's the power of, you know, of the movies, I guess, is like what, you know, because he changes his tune completely, doesn't he? Yeah, he's based on a real person who was gay, not that gay, but he was somebody who did shepherd the careers of a lot of actors. And it's really quite sad because he ended up dying of cancer, and everybody, he had no friends. He didn't have that revelation in the end where he became a good guy and the producer and all that. He died alone and of some form of cancer. But I really hate that the movie paints him to be so cartoonish. And I think it's a combination of two things. Really, well, first of all, an actor probably tired of playing the same role for over a decade and wanted something new. And just basically the sort of like surface level that Ryan Murphy and Ian Brennan have approached this subject matter in this world with. And it really shows more than ever through his character, because yeah, he is reprehensible.
He's almost mustache twirling.
He really is.
All of
he really is. Yeah.
It's like, here, I want to talk to you about a picture you can be in. Here, follow me into this room. Twirls his mustache. Now suck this dick.
Guys like that are just, you know, they're everywhere. But I think that it's just, it's so pronounced that it just accentuates like every sort of like false aspect. I almost said film, but of the series too. It really just, I think what I'm getting at is the way that history is played with here. It's fine to mix it in with fiction. I actually quite like when we see historical fiction. I think it's quite cool. This is a case where it's taken a little bit too far. I think the case of Hattie McDaniel really, really rubbed me the wrong way, because Hattie McDaniel famously is the first African-American woman to win an Oscar. And here she's depicted, first of all, miscast. But second of all, like, she wasn't allowed into the ceremony. They let her pick up her award and exit out the back.
Yeah, she wasn't allowed to watch. She could only come on, do the award thing, and then she had to immediately leave.
Well, in real life, she was allowed to go into the ceremony. She sat in the back table, and there were a few people, I think a couple producers and a couple cast members from Gone with the Wind that went and sat back with her at that back table, and were with her the entire time. The way that's played out here, the way that little bit of this story is played out here, it really sort of just re-victimizes her. It denigrates what really happened for the sake of nothing. At the end of the day,
well, what you're talking about is an even bigger magnified issue with the character of Rock Hudson, where it's like, hey, if you're going to fictionalize this person, at least follow a little bit of his life story. They just completely invent a new character, which is fine as, you know, a closeted actor, but then you name him Rock Hudson, and you have his career not in any way resemble Rock Hudson. It's like Rock Hudson was in like so many fucking westerns before anything really happened. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Frank, why don't you go ahead and go on to your final thoughts, and we'll do all of us, and then we can talk for like five
about the spoilers. Okay.
In a spoiler section at the end. Cause I have thoughts about that ending too. And I think I have different thoughts than y'all. So Frank, your final thoughts.
This is a piece of shit. There's no way around it. It's a shiny turd driving a beautifully vintage car and a colorful costume. That's really ultimately what it is. And I don't think you don't get to rewrite history to suit your own, you know, whimsy and think you're making it better, because you're actually just dismissing what actually did happen and what people actually, the strides that were actually made and the journeys of people that were actually there, and you're doing it for cheap entertainment. And that sucks. I'm not going to recommend this at all. I will say, because I should say something positive about this whole experience. I really love the opening sequence. And I'm not saying that to be flippant at all by any means. I really did. That skip intro thing at the beginning of everything. I never skipped it once because I loved seeing these young hopefuls. Everyone, they all had, you know, collective hopes, but they're individual hopes. And I loved watching them climb. I love watching them help each other up. And that little sequence is about aspirations. It's about optimism. And those are two tools that you really do need to make those kinds of dreams really happen. So I did love that. I'm just going to end this by saying I'm going to give 3 recommendations to anyone who has to suffer through this shit, because I think if, unless you're Margie in the Midwest who voted for Trump, you're not going to get anything substantial out of this thing. But I will say watch Pose, because that is actually another Ryan Murphy series, which is a sort of like semi-fictional chronicle of the drag balls in New York in the 1980s. That is really him paying tribute to that community, and it is a breathtakingly stunning series, and it's really great. Watch the documentary Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood, which does actually talk about the actual gas station in the 1950s in Hollywood that people did frequent. Unless, you know, you want your images of many, many of the legendary stars ruined from here on out, don't watch it. But it is a great chronicle of that gas station and the man who ran it. And it's really fascinating. He just died, I think, last year. Sky and the Secret History of Hollywood. And finally, read Out There in the Dark, which is a novel written by Wesley Strick, who's a screenwriter. He wrote Wolf and Batman Returns and Scorsese's Cape Fear. He wrote this novel in I don't know how long ago. It's called Out There in the Dark, and it deals with 1940s Hollywood. And it is about, you know, has different characters. One of them is a director who was big in Germany who came and now has to make a name for himself and actually garner some sort of respect and some sort of self-worth while war is raging in Germany. It's got the star that's got the young guy who's a contract player, who's an extra, and wants to make it big. It's got a lot of these archetypes that Hollywood does, but it actually paints them as real people and not as caricatures. After in the Dark, go for it. This is a piece of shit. I'm going to give it 1 David Corn Sweat out of 10 because he is very cute, but that's all he is.
Just to piggyback on you recommending things that are great, Sullivan's Travels, great movie about the transformative nature of film. I'm not as negative as Frank is on this. I think it is a fun show to watch, but I think the biggest issue with it is that it uses so many truths to piggyback what drama it creates in the show and then immediately backpedals on the drama and doesn't want to commit to anything beyond being a historical fantasy where Hollywood is even more sex involved than it is and that a lot of things can be wrapped up very easily involving homophobia and racism. Beyond that, I would just give this 4 out of 10 scaffolding plots that are immediately abandoned within 3 minutes. I was counting.
as the one who actually liked this for the most part-ish, I think it's interesting. I think that like people like us are actually exactly who this show is not for, yeah, because we have a tendency to know the truth.
Marge just doesn't care that Queen Latifah was able, or that Hannah McDaniels actually went to the Oscars, yeah.
It's just like, oh, there's a thing, and I can look her up on Google, and she exists. I think the show's biggest flaw is that it tried to, and I'm trying to think structural versus opinion, is it tried to mix history and fantasy a little bit more than it should have. If these were all original characters, and then the real Hollywood people were in the backdrop, then I think it would have gotten away with us a lot more than it did. As it was, it was weird seeing Rock Hudson portrayed the way he was, or Hattie McDaniel portrayed the way she was, or Adame Wong. And at the same time, watching this, I was going, okay, like, I know that this isn't necessarily for me, but I'm trying to view it as somebody else. And for that, like, if you can get past the sex, which just there's, it's, I keep going back to that. That is the worst part of the show. Then I think you have a lot of really interesting characters who are explored and have moments to shine, and there is some truly amazing acting in this. Like, everybody does a great job doing what their characters are, even if their characters are evil and vile.
Didn't you feel that the ending, the last episode, was sort of like, you know, patched together?
I think I liked what they were doing thematically. By the time I got to the last episode, I wasn't really watching the story so much as I was watching what they were trying to say about this. And I really liked most of the message they had at the end and some of how they handled it. And partly this comes from the fact that I don't really care about the Academy Awards. So like I was able to do that. And I think that your average Joe Schmo who just wants to have some fun, fluffy entertainment is going to really enjoy this. I think it's going to be just salacious enough that they're going to get a kick out of it. It's going to be filled with enough minority characters and LGBTQ characters that it might even introduce somebody to a lifestyle or an idea that they didn't have beforehand. And I think it's good that there was that representation. The show itself is okay. It's really just about watching that character work. I would give it 6.5 really terrible screen tests out of 10. All right. And now everyone who has not watched it and intends to watch it, turn off and come back and listen later, because we're going to talk, I think, pretty much about the last 20 minutes of this show for a few minutes. Here's what I did like about it. And like, yeah, I think it was silly that just like 90% of the major characters in this all won Oscars. That was dumb. Here's what I liked, though. Like,
unless you were white and then you didn't get an Oscar.
That's actually what I liked, is that as they're getting the Oscars, they cut away and show random people who either are black, are gay, are Asian, and you see the effect that that has on people seeing representation done. And I think that does a surprisingly better job at exemplifying why representation is important to somebody who is not a Hollywood geek than a lot of other discussions have, because you see palpable emotional responses. And like, I will admit that I was bawling through that whole segment, not because I gave a shit about any of the main characters, but because I got to see the effect that seeing an Asian woman who had been screwed over by Hollywood winning an Oscar had on Asian people in America. That was what was special about it to me. It was manipulative as shit, though.
I think it's a move that sort of like is undone by itself. I mean, there are four major categories that Meg ends up winning.
Isn't that the Jason Statham movie?
The Meg.
Yes, it is. It's a giant shark movie.
This movie that ends up winning like four major awards, you know, and a lot of the times it ends up beating Gentlemen's Agreements. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, that is the most hysterical thing I've ever heard. Gentlemen's Agreement is famously one of the bravest movies ever made about anti-Semitism. And it was made in the 40s. It's about, for those who don't know, kids that don't watch black and white movies, it's about this Jewish lawyer who goes undercover as a white guy to do a story on race and bigotry in 1940s America. And it's such a brave film for its day. Really, that's the film that you chose to, like, you know, dismiss in the favor of your piece of shit, Meg? I'm like, I can't think of anything more tone deaf. Honestly, it's like, geez, that's really when I checked out. The first time I heard that they lost a fucking Gentleman's Agreement, I was like, okay, wow, all right. Any bit of goodwill you had was gone.
Now, of course, to the rest of Americans who have never seen Gentleman's Agreement, that will not be a thing, but that is fair. You know, well, I mean, the thing is that that's what you deal with when you do historical fiction. You have to deal with the implications of the time you set it in. And so, like, that's a real thing. What about you, Nathan?
My big issue with this show and its ending, I mean, the ending itself is a very, you know, I mean, the last episode is called A Hollywood Ending. It is very much a Hollywood ending. One film fixes all the problems of racism, homophobia, all for winning an Oscar, which, I mean, is just in no way how reality works. And that's fine, I guess, if you consider this to be only a fantasy. But what works about a lot of historical fantasy is it follows the true story until a point, but this never did.
It's the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood comparison. Because, like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is an interesting movie that is very focused on these fictional characters who rub shoulders in a realistic for the time way with these other actors. So, like, it never feels, or it never felt to me like a fake world until, you know, the obvious ending of that movie where shit goes different. And, like, so, like, this has that movie had that Hollywood ending too, but it spent its time building out Hollywood, which this never did. This was always just a Ryan Murphy fantasy.
But I think the difference between these two is that the ending of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it doesn't denigrate the historical figures that represents.
Not at all. You know, and it commits to the fantasy.
Tarantino said he really wanted to show Sharon Tate for the first time as not a victim, as not someone who was murdered. That was, and you know, is as someone who lived and someone who enjoyed life. I mean, there's every real person here in Hollywood. Ryan Murphy takes Andy and Bryn. They take the struggles that each person had and they accentuate them.
And they lie about them outright. I mean, they soften the actual issues of racism, the actual issues of homophobia, just because it's not as interested in that, and it's more interested in the sex, and it's more interested in creating drama that it resolves far too quickly.
Yeah, no, you're totally right.
Yeah, you're right. And I think on that note, it's time to call it, because I think we're going to start repeating ourselves. Give it a listen. Tell us whether or not you liked it, and hopefully you enjoy it.
It's okay if you don't.
And you can check out some of the other shows we're putting out soon that hopefully are going to be better than Hollywood.